KALW.
If you are socially isolated, you have a 5 to 7 years of mortality greater than somebody who is socially active.
How are seniors coping in this time of isolation?
I'm very stressed. I feel like I'm in a nightmare, and then I'll wake up and then it'll all be over.
We hear how a Bay Area army of volunteers is working to relieve the anxiety. Then we continue our check-ins with reporters from around the globe on coronavirus. Today, we go to India.
It is unclear as to whether it'll be lifted or there'll be sort of a staggered exit from lockdown.
And Oakland pianist and MC Kev Choice shares the spiritual dimension of his music.
Using my talent to help other people get closer to their source, to their spirit, to their soul.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Most of the people who've died from the coronavirus in the U.S. have been over the age of 65. So it's no surprise that Governor Newsom singled out the elderly when he first explained how the state is going to fight the spread of the virus 3 weeks ago. Until we find a vaccine, fighting the virus means isolation in most cases. And since research has shown that loneliness can also be deadly, what have seniors and their friends and supporters been doing lately to stay connected while staying safe? KALW Audio Academy fellow Sarah Lye Sterland reports.
Did you know that the Big Bang happened about 13.5 billion years ago? And that the closest major galaxy is 2.5 million light years away from us? That's a big picture perspective that 80-year-old Donald Antanakis Matuzin pondered recently during a phone conversation with his friend, Sejal Doshi. They were playing a game where Donald slides his finger across the top of the pages of his encyclopedia as Sejal counts to five. When she stops, his finger stops.
So at random, I'd pick a section, a page, and on that page, I would read. If we don't like that page, we could choose a page ahead and a page behind. But what we cannot do is just open up the book to any subject we might be interested in.
It's a game that Donald and Sejal played together in a single-room occupancy studio in San Francisco before the shelter-in-place order.
This forces us to learn something new, even about a subject we aren't inclined to be interested in.
And now they're playing the game over the phone. Donald's used to a really social life.
So at the senior center, I took a dancing class, specifically hula, and then the humanist group, in which I made five presentations. Except for little brothers, they're all gone. I mean, that's a big minus in my life.
Little Brothers Friends of the Elderly is a nonprofit in San Francisco. There's plenty of research showing that loneliness was epidemic in the Western world even before the current coronavirus crisis.
Isolation and loneliness is something that kills people. If you are socially isolated, you have a 5 to 7 years of mortality greater than somebody who is socially active.
That's Little Brothers Executive Director Kathy Mihalik.
It lowers your immune system. And when you lower your immune system, you know, you can get different things wrong with you. You can have heart disease, diabetes, depression. The health effects is equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And look at the national outcry when we found out that smoking can kill.
The abrupt changes in the past few weeks are hitting the elderly particularly hard, Kathy says. And that's why Little Brothers is working to keep up the phone calls to the 414 seniors it serves in San Francisco. But that number's just a tiny fraction of all the seniors living in the Bay Area. The California Department of Aging estimates that almost 2 million seniors live in the region. About 20% of them live alone.
So for many individuals who weren't necessarily anxious before, their world has been upended.
That's Dustin Harper, the Institute on Aging's chief strategy officer.
They're no longer able to go and perform the same daily routines that they've performed for a long time. That creates a real traumatic change in their lifestyle and can lead to heightened concerns.
He says calls to the Institute on Aging's friendship line for elders have doubled since the shelter-in-place order came down. Sally Saunders is an 80-year-old poet and she's chafing under the order.
I'm very stressed. I don't feel like myself. I feel like I'm in a nightmare, and then I'll wake up in a minute and it'll all be over.
She lives in an assisted living facility and has her meals delivered to her. They're left in a bag on her door handle. Before the shutdown, she wrote a book of poems while vacationing on the Oregon coast with a friend. Now she's cooped up in her apartment, conducting her life through her computer.
I really like to go for nature walks. I can't do that. I like to travel. I can't do that. I can't see my friends. I can't hug my friends.
Last Tuesday, Governor Newsom announced that he was also trying to help by getting the state to partner with various nonprofits to make phone calls to seniors. The state also opened a COVID-19 telephone information line, and seniors can also call 211 for logistical help in their own neighborhoods. For his part, octogenarian Donald Antanakis Matuzin is doing the best he can. He's listening to public radio, texting with his friends, and working up the courage to go outside for a walk. He's also still chatting on the phone with his 32-year-old friend Sejal Doshi. Donald marvels that it was just a few weeks ago when they were sitting in his SRO listening to Russian composer Dmitri Shostakovich's Symphony No. 5. He was telling Sejal that this was a tune that his best friend whistled just before he died last fall. Donald misses sharing these stories in person.
It's like a dream now. Just think, Sejal was here and I was here and we were listening to music here. What planet was that on? Beginning to feel like a dream.
It's a dream or a nightmare that he and others wish they could wake up from soon. For KALW in Los Gatos, I'm Sarah Lai Sterland.
Sarah Lai Sterland is a fellow in our 2020 Audio Academy. You can find more stories from the class of 2020 at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This week, we're checking in with some journalists around the world to learn more about the effect coronavirus has had on people globally. And the reporters we're talking to, well, they have something in common. They are or were affiliated with KALW. Yesterday, we heard from Emma Nobel, a reporter in Australia. Today, we go to India to hear from Sandeep Roy, longtime KALW journalist and author who lives in Kolkata, India. As of today, the country reports a little over 4,000 cases. I talked to him on Skype to ask how Indians are coping.
So I'm in Kolkata at my mother's home, actually, and Kolkata, along with the rest of India, is in a corona lockdown. It has been since about the last week of March. It was supposed to. Actually, Kolkata went into lockdown before the rest of India did. So we are getting a few extra days of it. As of now, the lockdown is supposed to continue at least till the middle of April, till April 14th. But it is unclear as of yet as to whether it'll be lifted or there'll be sort of a staggered exit from lockdown. I mean, that is the million rupee question as to what happens in the middle of April. But as of now, it's very surreal to be in a city of millions like Kolkata, which is always just bustling with noise. You know, even at late at night, you can hear cars honking all the time. And now that city has just fallen very eerily quiet. Streets are empty. Only some food shops and grocery stores are open. Other than that, everything else is deemed as non-essential and shuttered.
That sounds a lot like here. And you mentioned Kolkata shut down earlier than the rest of the country, kind of also like the Bay Area and California. What was the reason there? Was it just the authorities in Kolkata saw it, you know, earlier than everybody else, or what? How did it go down?
I think what happened in Kolkata was that a couple of cases of people who had returned from abroad and were detected as positive for the coronavirus. And in a couple of those cases, the first case that was actually detected in Kolkata was of a young man from here who had gone to London, and he had spent time with people who were positive for corona. But when he came back, he had refused to go into the government infectious diseases center, even though he had a slight fever. And he'd sort of held off until the tests had come back that he was indeed positive, by which time people were panicking that he had actually possibly infected a lot of people around him. And so that caused an enormous hullabaloo here, because his mother was actually a highly positioned bureaucrat in the government. So people were worried that people in the highest levels of government had been exposed to corona. Mm. And so as a result of that, I think people started taking some precautionary measures. And also, you know, in a country as densely populated as India, and in a city as densely populated as Kolkata, you know, people felt like they couldn't really take chances, because we just don't have that kind of healthcare infrastructure to deal with a pandemic in full-blown pandemic form. So people tried to institute, in fact, more measures than many cities in America did, you know, temperature checks at the airport and a lot of things, which friends of mine returning at that time to cities in America said they didn't face any of that at the airports in America.
And that's something a lot of people are talking about. I know when I call back home to Sudan, one of the things is the embassy is organizing these flights for American citizens to leave back to the United States. And the kind of the running joke is, we don't want to go back to the United States with everything that we're hearing about the shortages of the respirators and the lack of testing. We're quite fine here, thank you very much, kind of thing. I'm wondering if you're hearing, you know, the same kind of sentiment from where you are, in terms of, you know, all of this news coming out of the superpower of the United States that is not coping with this really well.
Absolutely. In fact, I was just reading about similar evacuation flights happening for Americans from India. And somebody who was boarding this flight was in fact told by the authorities that, you know, at the airports in America, you're not going to have these kinds of checks that are happening at Indian airports for body temperature scanning and all of that. And there is a risk that you might be exposed to corona infection on the flight itself, because, you know, we can't take any guarantees. So, you know, are you really sure that you want to not just stay where you are and shelter in place, as it were, and come to America? And in this case, the person said they actually did not really want to go, but they had old elderly parents living in America, and so they felt like they needed to go and be with their parents, which is quite a turnaround from the usual immigrant story, where the elderly parents would be sitting in India and you know, their children would be coming from America to look after them.
Sandeep Roy is a longtime KALW host and reporter. You can hear his mini show called Dispatch from Kolkata. That's Wednesdays at 7:30 a.m. and 4:45 p.m. right here on KALW. And you can hear the rest of my interview with him at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now for some music. Well, we can't go out to see any shows. We're bringing the music to you. Pianist, composer, and MC Kev Choice represents Oakland hard. He started learning the piano in seventh grade at Westlake Junior High near Lake Merritt. He recently composed a piece for the Oakland Symphony. And though he's done stints in Illinois, New Orleans, and Atlanta, he considers the town his artistic and spiritual home. In this edition of Bay Area Beats, Kev talks about his love for his hometown, his EP called Feeling Ivory, and how music keeps him centered.
My name is Kev Choice. I'm a musician, pianist, MC, producer, composer, educator from Oakland, California. Growing up in Oakland, I think we're taught to have a sense of pride. You know, we know about our legacy all the way back to the Black Panthers, all the way back to the blues scene in the West Oakland, all the way back to just the history and the culture of the people of, you know, a blue-collar city, a small working class city, you know, being educated in the Oakland public schools and having certain teachers that kind of showed me, like, you know, this is who you are in this community, this is what your community stands for. Seeing people organizing protests, seeing people being outspoken against the government, like, there were always people standing up for what they believe in the name of our community. Like, we got to do this because we want to make a better community for Oakland. So that was always a very strong value instilled in me. We take that everywhere. When I went away to college, I was like, I'm from Oakland, California, and can't nobody tell me nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was just the way I felt. Like, I had a strong sense of where I was from. It gave me a lot of confidence of who I am as a man in America. This song is called Dance of the Displaced, and I dedicated it to the people right now in the city of Oakland who are being displaced from their homes, from high rent, from gentrification. And musically, the song has a lot of movements, a lot of tension, a lot of angst, a lot of ups and downs, and it kind of just reminded me of the feeling of the people who are from Oakland right now, like a lot of uncertainty, a lot of anxieties around where they're gonna live, how they're gonna stay, how they're gonna survive, how they're gonna provide for their families, and even time signature movements is just the instability of being in Oakland right now, of the community. It's definitely an interesting tension being from somewhere and seeing it change so dramatically and so drastically, so rapidly, and also being a part of a community of people that are fighting to maintain that identity. So I feel like that's the only thing that really gives me hope, is that knowing that there's people that are fighting to keep affordable housing. There are people fighting to keep arts vibrant in a community. There's people fighting to have a voice on the political landscape. I feel like I'm just a part, a voice of that movement of people who are trying to maintain the culture, the traditions, the values of Oakland for as long as we can.
And I'm feeling ivory. I feel like the world need a little more love.
Feeling ivory, like I'm really feeling like digging deeper into the piano, digging deeper into the keys. The title came to me just because I wanted to do something that was centered around piano, and I was just thinking of a clever way to I didn't want to be like piano in the dark or, you know, something like that. So it's a color, is right. And it's not white, but it's off-white. It's kind of, it gives me a melancholy type of feel. And it's not sad, but it just, it's very open to it, expressiveness. Like, it's like a blank sheet, an ivory sheet.
I messed up. I hope that was worth it. I hope that the heart heals. I pray for forgiveness. I know that some God's real. My God, your God, our God, reveal. The closer we get, the more we feel love.
And also when you're, you know, I'm writing songs on the piano, but I'm also writing raps. And I kind of wanted to showcase, like, you know, I rap and play piano at the same time or do songs. And it kind of makes you say things like when you're, most rappers, you know, you got drums and bass and trumpets and violins and synths. It kind of covers up what you're really saying. It's almost like doing a spoken word piece. Like, you really hear every single word. You really hear the inflections and expressions come out a lot, you know what I'm saying? So when you're rapping to just solo piano, it really gives it a certain feel and dynamic that most rap songs don't have because they're covered up with so many other instruments.
Never took a minute off, not in my memory. I was born to be a boss, that's how it's meant to be. Glad I had a better option than judge trying to sentence me. Niggas trying to shoot at me. Thank God for this music, yeah. Especially living in my community where options is like two or three. Sell dope, play ball, or get a 9-to-5. Still struggle to survive, how'd I make it out alive? Thank God for this music, yeah. Even though they told me I would never make it. You too complex.
Thank God was the song. I wrote that song when I was in my new studio over in East Oakland, and just kind of talking about being thankful for the things I'm going through as an artist, the good things, the bad things, the struggles, the ups, the downs. It's like, and also just being a very spiritual person, and you know, as a pianist, I play in churches every week, every weekend, and it kind of keeps me centered. It gives me that, at least that one day a week, to where it's not about me as an artist, it's just me using my talent to help other people get closer to their source, get closer to their spirit, to their soul, in however way that my music allows them. And to me, that's almost one of the greatest feelings, is someone coming up to you at the church being like, I just loved how you played. It really, you know, really made me feel this way, or helped me with what I'm dealing with in my life. So to me, that's a very rewarding experience. And a lot of times, it's something that I do naturally, so I appreciate it as a gift. It's not like I have to go in there with the intention, like, I'm going to touch someone today. I just go and do what my God-given talent is just play the piano and just release, and people accept it, and it helps them.
Some people got weeded out, had to learn the difference between friends and associates. Folks use it for your talents when it's for their benefit. Thank God for forgiveness, thank God for the vision. To see disappointment as opportunity, cousin, even family became distant. I still love them, no judgment. I rise, we rise, that's a promise. Thank God for a clear mind, thank God for a good heart. Even on my worst days, sometimes I want to run away.
It was just a song of me being thankful for everything I'm going through, the good, the bad, the ups, the downs, and just allowing to be what's gonna be, you know what I'm saying, and being appreciative of it.
Purpose, knowing I wasn't perfect, knowing I had missions on this earth to fulfill, stay working, maybe to avoid addressing hurt, staying in the public eye, but really an introvert.
That was Oakland composer, pianist, and MC Kev Choice. That piece was produced by Jen Chien. Kev's latest album release party was scheduled for April 10th, but of course, it's been postponed. He released a new music video yesterday, though, so you can enjoy his latest tunes from home until the concert can be rescheduled. Find all that information at KALW.org.
For every storm, when tears are falling, no one knows me like you.
And before we go, we wanted to let you know we're currently accepting applications for our Audio Academy training program. So if you want to learn how to make radio, how to become a better storyteller, and serve your community, find the application information at KALW.org and apply.
I'm thankful for it all.
Today's team includes Janae Darden, Precious Green, Lisa Morehouse, True Gwynn, and Marissa Ortega-Welch. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tadek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.